Mahabharata Chapter 3. The Pandavas come to Hastinapur. In Hastinapur, Dhritarashtra had performed 5 sacrifices with the wealth Pandu had bestowed upon him. He gave charity to hundreds of thousands of Brahmins and satisfied the gods with his offerings. The kingdom flourished, and the citizens had everything they desired. They were devoted to virtue, sacrifice, and truth. Bearing love and affection for one another, they grew in prosperity. Hastinapur was like the ocean, filled with numerous palaces and mansions. There were golden arches and crystal fountains everywhere. Between broad paved highways lay beautiful gardens, and the air was filled with the sweet fragrance of blossoming trees. The clatter of horses' hooves and chariot wheels mixed with the trumpeting of elephants and the blare of conch shells, which marked the beginning of sacrificial performances. Holy chants uttered by numerous Brahmins emanated from tall and exquisitely carved temple buildings, which graced the city in their thousands. Hastinapur appeared like Indra's celestial capital, and each day dozens of feudal kings would arrive bringing tribute. Assisted by Bhishma, Dhritarashtra ruled over the kingdom on Pandu's behalf. After hearing of Pandu cursed and his subsequent retirement, Dhritarashtra, despite his blindness, was officially installed as monarch. He thought sadly of his brother and missed him greatly, but in his absence he completely managed all the affairs of state. It once came to pass that Vyasadeva arrived hungry and thirsty at Dhritarashtra's palace. Gandhari attended to him conscientiously. Vyasadeva was pleased with the girl and blessed her. "You shall soon have 100 sons as powerful as your husband." In due course of time, Gandhari conceived. For 2 years she bore the embryo within her womb, becoming increasingly anxious. Then one day news reached her that Kunti had given birth in the forest to a boy as effulgent as the morning sun. Out of frustration and anger at her own excessively long gestation, she struck violently at her womb. She then brought forth a hard mass of flesh that resembled an iron ball. Her nurses informed her of the stillbirth. She was afflicted by grief and thought of Vyasadeva and his boon. At once the sage appeared before her and said, "What have you done?" Gandhari told him how she had become overwhelmed with envy and frustration when she heard of Kunti giving birth to Yudhisthira. With tears in her eyes, she said, "I struck my womb, and this lump of flesh came out. What then was the meaning of your boon?" Vyasadeva replied that his words could never prove false. He asked the servants to bring 100 pots filled with ghee. He then sprinkled cool water on the lump of flesh, and it gradually divided into 101 parts, each the size of a thumb. These were placed in the pots, which were then sealed and placed in a concealed spot. Vyasadeva instructed that the pots should be opened only after 2 more years had passed. He then departed for his lonely mountain ashram. Exactly after the 2 years had elapsed, the pots were opened one by one. From the first came a child who was named Duryodhan. At the moment he was brought out of the pot, the sound of braying asses and screaming vultures was heard. Jackals howled, and the wind blew fiercely. Without any apparent cause, fires sprang up all around the city and raged in all directions. The frightened king Dhritarashtra summoned the Brahmins, Bhishma, Vidura, and other ministers and counselors. He asked them the meaning of the omens. "The eldest of the princes is undoubtedly Yudhisthira, and he should inherit the kingdom. I do not dispute that. But will my own son become the king after him? O wise ones, please tell me what is right and lawful." As Dhritarashtra spoke, the terrible sounds began again from all sides. Hearing this, Vidura replied to the king, "When these omens are seen at the birth of a child, it is evident that he will be the exterminator of his race. Our prosperity and future depend upon his being abandoned." Do not hesitate, O king. This child must be cast away at once. Vidura told Dhritarashtra that he would still have 99 other sons. There would be no sin in abandoning this child, as the scriptures clearly state that an individual can be abandoned for the sake of a family. Indeed, a family can be abandoned for the sake of a village for the sake of a city, and the world itself can be abandoned for the sake of the soul. Dhritarashtra was unable to accept Vidura's counsel. He could not allow his son to be cast away. He shook his head slowly and said nothing in reply. As the nurse stood by holding the baby, the king waved her toward Gandhari, and the child was handed to her. Bhishma and Vidura looked at one another, but said nothing. Dhritarashtra was the monarch. His word was final. Over the course of the next month, all the pots were opened, and 100 boys and one girl were brought out. All the boys bore the signs of being great warriors and rulers. The king and queen rejoiced in their good fortune. Dismissing the evil omens, they dwelt contentedly in Hastinapur, attended by Bhishma and Vidura. On Saptashrota Mountain, spring had arrived. Pandu, surrounded by his 5 youthful sons, felt young again. He sported with the boys in the hills, scaling rock faces and challenging lions in their caves. They dived and played in mountain pools and all climbed trees. Wrestling and laughing together, they rolled about the soft grassy slopes. One evening, Pandu went into the woods with Madri to fetch roots and fruits for their evening meal. As they strolled, they saw countless varieties of blossoming trees and bushes. The air was heavy with scent, and the sounds of cuckoos and other birds filled the air. Black bees swarmed about the many-colored flowers that surrounded lakes overgrown with lotuses. The celestial atmosphere awoke romance in Pandu's heart. He gazed at the beautiful Madri, his mind influenced by Cupid. It was a hot day, and Madri was clad in a long silk robe. In the bright sunshine, Pandu could see the outline of her exquisite form, which resembled that of a goddess. The soft breeze made her dress cling to her body, revealing her slender waist and firm round breasts. Pandu could not suppress his desire. He had kept himself in check for 12 years and had not dared to contemplate embracing his wives. Kendama's curse was always uppermost in his mind, and he had resigned himself to practicing celibacy with the determination of a rishi. It seemed ages ago when he had been able to enjoy conjugal love with his wives. Now Pandu again felt those stirrings moving his heart. His mind was confounded, and he moved closer to Madri, gently placing his hand on her arm. Madri at once understood what was in Pandu's heart. She was seized by conflicting emotions. How was her lord suddenly approaching her in this way? Out of fear of the curse, he had carefully avoided any physical contact with either her or Kunti for a long time. Although she herself had longed for his embrace, she had scrupulously avoided any situation that might entice her husband. She did not even apply cosmetics or perfumes. But as the powerful Pandu embraced her, she felt her resolve weaken. Delight and fear seized her heart at once. As her emotions clashed, her mind was petrified. What about the curse? If Pandu did not stop, he would doubtlessly be destroyed. She had to prevent him. Madri tried to push her husband away. Pandu smiled, incited further by her protests. His mighty arms, deeply tanned and marked with scars from his bowstring, closed around her like serpents. Overpowered by desire, he could not even hear her as she reminded him about the curse. He pressed her lips with his and dropped down to a grassy slope with the beautiful queen held tightly in his arms. Lifting her robes, he pushed himself firmly against her soft body. Madri's struggles only inflamed his passion more. As if impelled by the Lord of Death himself, The monarch entirely lost his reason under the influence of lust. No thought of Kandama's curse entered his mind as he lost himself in enjoyment with his fair-skinned wife. Even as he tried to consummate the act with Madri, the Rishi's words took effect. Pandu's chest was seized with a terrible pain, and a shocked look crossed his face. His body stiffened and went slack. As Pandu's body fell from hers, Madri let out a wail of sorrow. Her worst fears had been realized. Despite all her protests, she had not been able to prevent her husband's death. The distraught queen repeatedly embraced her dead husband and lamented loudly. Kunti heard Madri's cries and ran over to where she lay. As Kunti approached, the tearful Madri told her to come alone without children. Kunti quickly sent the boys back to the ashram and then rushed to Pandu's side. She dropped to the ground. Kunti realized at once what had happened, and she cried out, "My lord!" Tears welled into her eyes as she turned to Madri. "O noble one, how have you allowed this to happen? I was always so careful to protect our lord from this very danger. How did he embrace you, knowing of the Rishi's curse? Why did you tempt him when you were alone together? He was always grave in our company as he thought of Kandama's words. How did he become so careless?" Madri wept, unable to reply. Kunti tossed about on the ground next to her. The two beautiful ladies embraced their husband's dead body and shed profuse tears. Kunti again addressed Madri. "O princess of Madra, you are surely more fortunate than I, for you saw our lord's face light up with joy as he approached you in this lonely place." Gathering her senses, Madri replied, "O sister, with tears in my eyes I tried to resist him. Yet he could not control himself. He seemed bent on fulfilling the Rishi's curse." Kunti prayed for strength. Somehow this was God's arrangement. The ways of providence were always mysterious. But what should be done now? What was her duty? She gently stroked the head of her younger co-wife and said, "O Madri, there is only one recourse for me. Please allow me to ascend to the heavens with our Lord. Rise up and raise our children. Give me the body, and tightly embracing it, I shall enter fire." Madri shook her head. She pleaded with Kunti. "The monarch died as he approached me for intercourse. His desire was not satiated. Should it not be I who goes to the region of the dead to gratify him? I am still clasping him, even now, and will not allow him to go without me. O Kunti, please let me go." Madri felt incapable of bringing up the children by herself. Kunti would be a far better mother. Madri had seen her gentle dealings with the boys. She would surely treat them all equally. Madri begged Kunti's permission to enter the fire with Pandu. "O Kunti, the king sought me with desire. Grant me leave to fulfill that desire. You would be doing me the greatest good. I shall leave my sons in your care without any fear." Kunti looked compassionately upon Madri as she lay with her arms around Pandu and bathed him with her tears. The noble Kunti felt her heart torn. Although, as the elder wife, it was her privilege to choose to follow the king to the next world, how could she deny Madri? It was to her that Pandu had been attracted. If Madri were to live, she would live with the memory of that brief and terrible moment all her life. Guilt would consume her, along with the anguish of being unable to fulfill her lord's last desire. Although she longed to follow her husband, Kunti could not be so cruel to her co-wife. She touched Madri gently and said, "So be it." Kunti then went with a heavy heart toward the ashram. When the boys heard of their father's death, they were struck with grief. They ran crying to where he lay and fell to the ground like powerful lions rolling on the earth. Madri blessed them tearfully and told them, that she would be ascending the pyre with her husband. She asked her two sons to remain with Kunti and to serve her steadfastly. The boys were too shocked to reply. They watched as the rishis built a pyre next to the king's body. Then, while reciting mantras, placed his body upon the pyre. They asked Yudhisthira to step forward. The prince, blinded by tears, set fire to the pyre and stood back. As the flames rose, Madri folded her palms and fell upon her lord's body, holding tight as the fire consumed them both. Within minutes, both she and Pandu were gone. The grief-stricken Kunti then asked the rishis what she should do. The rishis advised Kunti to return to Hastinapur with her boys as soon as possible. They also told her that they would accompany her, carrying the remains of Pandu and Madri with them. The large number of rishis, siddhas, and charanas formed a procession, walking ahead of Kunti and her sons. By their mystical powers, they all arrived at Hastinapur within a short time. Kunti then presented herself at the northern gate, and messengers ran swiftly to inform the king. Upon hearing of her arrival, Dhritarashtra, Bhishma, Satyavati, and all the other Kuru elders hurried to the gate, followed by a large number of citizens who had heard that an assembly of celestials had arrived. Everyone was struck with wonder to see the brilliant rishis surrounded by siddhas and charanas. People came out in the thousands to see those divine beings. Dhritarashtra, along with his 100 sons, bowed before the rishis. Bhishma and the others also offered their obeisances to the sages, and after offering them seats, they sat before them on silk mats spread out on the ground. When the crowd was finally settled, Bhishma went forward and worshipped the rishis by bathing their feet and offering them argya. He answered their inquiries about the kingdom's welfare, saying that everything was well. Then one of the leading rishis stood up and addressed the Kuru elders. The virtuous monarch went to the Saptashrota mountain to observe the vow of celibacy. Somehow, by the Lord's inscrutable plan and the arrangement of the gods, his five sons were born. The rishi then introduced each of Pandu's sons and revealed the identities of their divine fathers. He told them how the boys had been trained in Vedic knowledge and had grown to youthhood in the company of rishis and siddhas. Glancing around at the large concourse of men who had assembled outside the city, the rishi said, "Steadily adhering to virtue and leaving behind him these children, Pandu has ascended to the higher worlds. The chaste Madri has gone with him. Now his sons should be accepted as the kingdom's rightful heirs." The rishi pointed to an urn lying nearby, covered with a white cloth. "Here are the remains of Pandu and his wife. Perform the funeral rites and accept his sons as if they were your own. We shall now depart." When the rishi stopped speaking, he, along with all the other rishis and celestial beings, vanished. In astonishment, the citizens returned to their homes. Bhishma then led Kunti and the boys into the city and arranged for their accommodation in a royal palace. Dhritarashtra ordered the funeral rites to be performed and declared a state of mourning in the city for 12 full days. The Kurus were distracted with grief over Pandu's loss. Pandu had been dearly loved by all the citizens, and they loudly lamented. Pandu's five sons, known as the Pandavas, lay on the bare ground for 12 days, giving full vent to their grief. They did not accept royal comforts or beds, and they wept along with the Kuru elders. At the end of the mourning period, the Kurus perform Pandu's Shraddha. They distributed vast amounts of food and wealth to the Brahmins on behalf of the departed souls. Then life returned to normal in Hastinapur, and Pandu's sons took their place in the royal family. It was at that time that Vyas chose to again appear in the city. He spoke privately to the bereaved and sorrowful Satyavati. O Mother, fearful and terrible times lie ahead. The dark age of Kali now approaches. Sin increases day by day. Soon, by the evil acts of the Kurus, your race will be destroyed, and great havoc will be wrought in the world. Vyasa advised his mother to immediately retire to the forest rather than staying to witness the pain and horror that would soon follow. She should devote herself to yoga practice and meditation. After Vyasa left, Satyavati reflected on his words. She decided to follow his advice. She then told her two daughters-in-law of her intentions and asked Pandu's distraught mother, Ambalika, to accompany her. The two royal ladies soon left for the forest to dedicate themselves to asceticism. In time, they gave up their bodies and went joyfully to the higher regions. Ambika remained at Hastinapur with her son, Dhritarashtra.